So good morning. The topic for this morning is, am I practicing? Is this practice? Am I really doing it? And this question comes up in so many different stages of practice. And it comes up often when we first walk through the door of a Zen center, of like sitting down for Zazen with the group and looking around and thinking, well, is this it? Am I really doing it? What's everybody else doing? Does this count? It comes up when we deepen our practice and perhaps take Jukai, take the precepts, take a teacher, and have this question. So, am I really practicing? Is this it? Is this how it works? Question comes up again and again. It comes up when we first walk through the door. It comes up when we deepen our practice. It comes up later in practice when we've been engaging it for a while, and it doesn't feel like anything in particular is going on, or it doesn't feel like it used to feel, or there's feels maybe a little flat. So I've asked this question a lot, and I've heard this question a lot. I've been on both ends of that question of, is this really practice? Does this count? Is anything happening? And I'm going to offer some thoughts about this question, and more it's about inviting you to engage this question for yourself, to consider. So just consider, so the invitation is for you to be thinking about this question. And this question, is this practice, uncovers kind of spider webs into a whole bunch of other questions. Like, what is practice? And what is practice for me? What is practice for you? Who decides? Who would decide whether you're practicing or not? Who judges that? Do you judge yourself? All these things that kind of spider web and come up around this question. So there's a lot packed into this question, is this practice? Am I practicing? So I invite you to hold the question, and to part of the point of this talk is, you know, one, for you to kind of hold this question and notice what's coming up even as I pose the question to you. Do you reject the question? Do you not want to engage the question? Do you think I don't have that question? What are the thoughts and responses that come up around considering that question for yourself? And also to just know that it's not an unusual question to have in practice. And it comes up in different forms, at least it has for me, in different stages of practice. And it sort of changed over time, but it's a useful question to engage. And also the question of, why am I asking this question? Why am I asking, is this practice? What's underneath that? And does it not feel like enough? Am I judging my practice in some way? What's going on? Why is that coming up? And not to say that I don't mean to imply at all that we shouldn't engage that question. It's interesting when it comes up, because oftentimes it's related to some other thoughts about our practice or ideals of it. I mean, just spider webs into all these different things. So I'm going to offer a few thoughts about this topic, and then we're going to do a little small group discussion thing. Mm-hmm. So just a preview of coming attraction, that's what's on the horizon. So that you're not surprised. So I'm just going to offer a few thoughts, and then we're going to divide you up. Because I think it's interesting to reflect. This is more about reflecting yourself, what this means for you. But I will offer some thoughts. So what do we mean when we use the word practice? This word practice, we often talk about Zen practice, and most of you probably have this idea, but it sometimes practice can imply practicing in order to do something right, and that's not the sense that we're using here. We're practicing in the sense of doing, the way that you practice yoga or someone practices a vocation, practices law. It's something that we do. So what do we consider practice? What are the elements of practice? And I think this is a particularly tricky question to answer as lay people, because our lives take different forms and different shapes. So it's a very individualized answer. What is practice? Am I practicing? Is practice permeating my life? But I'm going to offer some thoughts about what is classically sort of understood as like some of the components. I imagine if you have this big pot on the stove and your recipe says practice, what are the things that you would toss in this boiling pot that might eventually come to this delicious practice that we're cooking up? But again, it's really, I think it is especially harder, especially hard as lay people when we're making a lot of choices about the form that our life takes, about our jobs, about family life, about what we're going to do with our time, versus monastic practice where you hop into the container, the schedule is what the schedule is, and it feels a little bit easier to say, I'm practicing, I'm following the schedule, I'm taking the form of a practitioner in a monastery. So it's a little bit more challenging for us, and I think that's where some of the tension comes in, is like, is this really, am I really doing it? But I'm just going to highlight some of the components that you throw into the pot of practice. One monastery that I got to visit a couple of times is called Zen River, and I did a couple of retreats there, and it was at a time in my life where I didn't have a community to practice with at all and was feeling pretty lonely, and I talked to the teacher there and asked, so how do I, and this is after I've been practicing a long time, and I think my question took the form of, how do I practice? And he pointed me to these components of practice, and they have a great website with these lists of what practice is, what training is. I'm going to talk about that. But reflecting on that encounter, I remember feeling a little bit like, I know that. I know what those components are, and like that I was a big miss in my question, because I think what I was looking for is the answer to, is my practice okay? Am I practicing enough? Is this what practice looks like for someone that's taken the form of Jody Dungay in this world? Is this practice for me? And so that was, and see, he didn't know me. He didn't know all the stuff underneath my question. And I think it was the first time that I had visited there. So my question had been, what is practice? So he pointed to me to these elements of practice that they include when someone is seriously undertaking practice at their monastery. So the components that he listed were meditation, of course, that's it. We assume that one. Ritual, study, and bodhisattva activity. So those are the things that they consider training. That's, he put it under the umbrella of training. And I'm going to offer a couple of thoughts about each of these. So meditation, zazen, is the core of our practice. That ritual was interesting in terms of including that, and that often is a supportive element to our practice. So I think of ritual as something that we do the same way again and again that connects us through time to others that have done that ritual the same way. So I think around here, around places of practice like a Dharma Rain, we often don't call it ritual, we might call it more form, like how we do things. We do it the same way each time. And one aspect, as I just said, is that it connects us to others through time. It helps us physically act out, moving as one body, especially when we practice on retreat together, where we're doing the same thing the same way, and you really have this physical acting out of the truth of our interconnection with each other. So that's part of the benefit of ritual. And another part of ritual that is useful is that we notice how we bump up against ritual. If we vow to take a certain ritual as our practice day to day, like saying the mealtime verse or doing things a certain way, then we notice when we don't do it. We notice our resistance to doing it when we are doing it, but we don't really want to do it. We notice when we sort of glide right into it, and it feels really affirming and connecting. Brings us up to the contents of our own minds, or if we think, why did I vow to even do this? This is really dumb. All of those things are really useful. So rituals, there's lots of different levels of how that supports us in our practice. And then study, we often talk about how study and Zazen go together. So study, and we can kind of, for me, I can tip towards one or the other. It's hard for me to find this sort of balance, but study and Zazen practice inform each other. And that's why they get emphasized a lot, to do some study, really engage the sutras, engage the teachings, because it informs our not only our Zazen practice on the cushion, but more importantly, our Zazen practice as we carry that mind of meditation out into the world. So there's this resonance, this deepening of our way that we move and actually bring that mind of meditation wisdom out into the world that is informed by both study and Zazen. So they support each other, and there's a way that study can really sink down deep into our Zazen. So they support each other. And then Zen River lists Bodhisattva activity. I would include under that umbrella, so that would include engaging in the world, making our practice manifest by the activity that we undertake and how we interact with others. And under that umbrella, I would put our ethical practice, precept practice. That's really, the way we express it often here is like our primary practices are Zazen and precepts. Here they put it under Bodhisattva activity, but it's the 16 Bodhisattva precepts are the precepts. So engaging those. The other thing that I would include under practices, one other thing about study is if we want to answer this question about what is practice, what does practice look like, am I practicing, we're encouraged again and again to follow the examples of the ancestors. So studying what the lives of the ancestors, the lives of previous teachers, really does give us these models for practice. We have to engage it ourselves in this unique way in our lives, but we get a lot of clues. We get a lot of help from those examples of the ancestors. The other thing I would add to this list is regularly engaging, and maybe it fits somewhere in this list, but regularly engaging with a teacher and with Sangha. A teacher can often reflect back to us the things that we don't see about our practice that might actually be practice. So I think I know that I have brought that question to Gyokuho again and again. This is what's going on for me, and what she's been able to reflect back are the elements of practice in that, or the threads, the clues. So we often don't see those things for ourselves. So Sangha and teachers can really help reflect back, like, what's going on? Does this count? And ultimately, we answer that question for ourselves. But it's really helpful to have support and kindness and friendliness and encouragement along the way. So please take advantage of that. We don't see our blind spots. We really do need Sangha to reflect that back to us. That's why it's so excellent to practice in community. So we notice those things. So those give you some just ideas. I don't think those are probably surprises, but sometimes it's helpful to hear it kind of all on a list if you're asking that question. But I think the heart of this is that it can look so many different ways. And why do we ask the question? So I have more to say, but I want us to have a chance to talk to each other about this. So I'm going to divide you up into groups of three, and everyone's going to have 3 minutes. Some of you have heard this before. So each person's going to have 3 minutes. I've upgraded from two. I was doing 2 minutes. So it's going to be 3 minutes to talk. So the person who's talking will have those 3 minutes to either talk and respond to the question I'm about to give you, or if there's nothing to say or you have said what you'd like to say, then the group will just sit in silence. So there's 3 minutes, whether you talk or you sit zazen or whatever you do. So you have the 3 minutes. So don't feel, the beauty of that, it feels kind of weird, like I'm not gonna have anything to say and now we're gonna sit there for 3 minutes. But it really is meant to be restful, give you some space to gather your thoughts as things come up, or if you say, you know, we're all good at sitting in silence. So it's a comfortable group to do this with. And then the other people in your group, will be just listening. Completely listening. So it's also excellent practice for a wholehearted, complete attention to somebody else. It's a gift that we can give somebody else that we often don't have in our distracted society that we live in. So without interrupting, without asking questions, any of those things, and there'll be chance at the end for us to kind of engage with each other. But so there's the person talking, and then the two people completely listening, and then everyone will get three minutes. So, and the question, you probably already know kind of the question, really just respond to this question is, what do you think practice is? How do you know if you're practicing or not? Does this question come up for you? Any of those things. And so the way I'm going to divide you up is take a candle, and then you're going to find the matching candles. And so some of you are going to be in groups of three, a couple I think are going to be in groups of two. So if I've done this correctly. All right, so find your people, and I want to make sure that it worked out. So that you at least have groups of two.
Yellow.
Pink or red?
I'm pink.
Same.
Blue.
Same.
Yep.
Okay.
Here we go. Pink or red?
I think that's you guys. So I think there might just be two of you.
Oh, or you're blue.
Okay.
You guys are blue.
You guys are
blue.
There should be a short blue and a tall blue and a little blue.
I guess we're a group of two.
And you're a group of two. So I'm going to ring a bell to get the figure out who's starting first. And then, yeah, that works out. So the groups that have two, you're going to have a great silence across
topic. We're going to have three periods, and we've got to figure out who's first. Rock, paper, scissors.
What was your name again?
All right. So first person can start.
Okay.
So. All right, so let's come back together. Well, thank the people for listening, and then come back as a learning group.
Do you want to pass around your jar?
Yes.
We don't care if our group was small.
Do we try to go back to our original
chair? Only I had four for the other digit.
Are we collecting these? The little
I'm sending the jar.
So extremely happy.
extremes.
Why don't I feel it?
There we go.
Yeah, let's get ourselves back in there.
We just appreciate you guys. So I'd love to hear back from the small groups, anything that came out of your discussion about what is practice for you, how do you know if you're practicing? So people wouldn't mind sharing, don't share what somebody else shared, but if you could share a sense of what came out in your small groups, that'd be great.
I'm sort of reflecting not so much the nature of the discussion, but sort of how I'm responding to it, that having that list of the things that go in, my analytic mind just really grabbed onto that. And I wanted to identify what, you know, my ritual and my and habit and location. And then I thought, well, that's the labeling. That's the giving, you know, that's the describing or defining. So I guess I just have to sit with that.
Well, I think in our group, one of the things that came out is that practice can be take different forms and have different qualities. It can be the calm that one might get into when sitting. It can be an engagement with others in a community or in the outside world. It can be the kind of mind-challenging experience that happens in the study, such as in reading a Zen book.
Did anybody talk about how you know if you're practicing, how you yourself feel you have a sense if you're practicing?
I spoke a little bit to that. For me, it's just, it's a very personal sort of inner reflection. That's not quite what I was looking for, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where there feels like there's some congruence in my life, where I don't, and this changes over time, I would say too, but where it doesn't feel like there's a huge piece missing or a huge pull to something, but that there's some balance in the pieces of practice. And when it's out of whack, I actually feel really drawn to something, like, I really need to do more sitting meditation, or I really need to read that book. And when it lines up a little better, I feel like, well, at least for now, I think for myself at this point in time, it's going okay. That's going okay is probably the best there is, too. That's right.
I think in our group, we kind of got, I want to say sidetracked or whatever. It was like, oh, here's this list of four. How do we fit into the, how do we list into the fit of the list of four, as opposed to, for me, what feels like the, you know, the harder question of the, you know, what does practice, a more open-ended questions. So
that was the hazard of sharing such a list. So, yeah. Because then it's immediate, like, how do I stack up with the list? Right. I almost did it in a different order. But,
in our group, I noticed the list to me felt like, have you seen those area graphs where there's a bunch of spokes on a wheel and you plot a point on each spoke as how far out it is from the center, and then you interconnect them? Mm-hmm. And if something's really balanced, you get like a pentagon. And if things are really unbalanced, you get like a triangle, right?
Yeah.
And one of the things that I noticed is that I was thinking of your list in terms of ingredients on a graph like that, and mm-hmm. that one of the things I've noticed is that as one of those spokes pulls, it's almost like the others have to draw in order to feed it. And so when your practice becomes kind of unbalanced, you can kind of notice that practice is becoming just one thing, And what that one thing is seems to change for me over time. And so there's this sort of constant movement in terms of what practice is. Practice feels the best when it's fairly balanced, right? There's this sort of mania that happens if you're just focusing on one thing, and maybe you're missing other practice opportunities. So, I don't know. Just something that I was thinking is focus the enemy of good practice insofar as it will cause you to ignore other opportunities?
Well, and balance for you is really unique. It may not be balanced for me, or, you know, so that's what also is part of the challenge, I think. Like, what balance is an internal state of knowing that balance. Any other thoughts?
What came out of the conversation for me is practice is what's beneath everyday life or everyday habits of mind. So being awake to life as opposed to being carried by habit energy. So practice was that larger picture, larger perspective, and not being caught in small details. That's practice. And how do I know if I'm practicing?
Is if I'm really getting, I don't know if it's for me, but it's more like if you lose perspective and you get really embroiled in the surface, then you know that you've lost it, and then you go back. So, and I said that even when you go back, like she talked about congruence, like, I always look for really strong congruence, so I miss the little ones. So, how deep can you go? That kind of thing. And is it a matter of degree or is it a one time awakening? Like, I don't know, but I'm veering off, but it's like practice is beneath.
That's an excellent segue into my wrap-up points. So I had a couple of things I just wanted to highlight. And one of them, I think it's kind of touching on the things that the two of you were bringing out, is that, so there's a little story that goes with this. So I was at a day-long intro to Zazen, to practice retreat, and I was helping. And somebody asked the person leading, basically, the question was something like, how can I be like you? Which was a really interesting way of putting it. And how I interpreted that question was like, what does mature practice look like? You know, for somebody who just walked through the door that day. So what's the difference between my beginning day one practice, literally, and your practice of many years? And the answer was, practice begins to permeate more and more and more of your life. And I thought that was such an excellent answer, really stuck with me all these years later. There seems to be, and I think that rings true for me internally, there's less of a divide between, like, this is practice and, well, this, I don't know what this is. but it does fill up your life, kind of like if you imagine just water permeating dry dirt and stones, it just becomes one after a while. You can't tell where the water is and where the dry dirt is. It's all one. So that's an aspiration, I would say. I think that's an aspiration, having it fill up more and more. But you kind of have the sense, for me, I have this sense of in and out of harmony when I've neglected aspects of my practice, or there's parts that of my life that I'm not looking at and not including in practice. So that was one. The other thing I want to highlight is that there's a kind of a saying in Zen, nothing happens but something changes. So often feels like nothing is happening. We're sitting for Zazen day after day, or we're coming here or whatever. But over time, we can look back and see transformation has actually happened. And sometimes it's so small and so subtle that we don't really see it. And sometimes it doesn't have to feel like anything at all is happening. And oftentimes getting on the cushion when it doesn't feel super exciting and there's nothing that we're really diving into, that's often the very ground for transformation. So I offer that as encouragement to to take heart if it doesn't feel like anything's really happening. But if you can look back through time, earlier stages of your life, if you've been practicing for a while, you notice something has changed about how I'm responding, about what's going on. So that was the second thing. And then the last thing, I just wanted to share this very familiar passage from Dogen's universally recommended instructions for Zazen. He says, "The Zazen I speak of is not meditation practice. It is simply the Dharma gate of joyful ease." Another translation of that is, "The Zazen I speak of is not learning meditation. It is simply the Dharma gate of repose and bliss." So when practice permeates our life, there's this sense of ease with our lives, no matter what's coming up. We're in non-opposition to all that is arising, and there's a sense of ease. So that is everything for today. Thank you very much for being here and listening.
Thank you.
And participating.